Scholars tell us that we mustn't bring our Western minds to bear on words like schism and split and heretic, that in the India of those days, such words didn't have the meaning that they have for us with our history of blood and burning alive and crusades. Not at all. And the Chinese pilgrims, for instance, report seeing the Buddhist monks and the Hindus walking together in the processions. There's been very little of the furious hatred. And when something's been accomplished by perhaps, well, dubious means, the end was not thought to justify the means. As a case, for instance, although this is not exactly early India, it's about 700 AD, Shankara wished to enter on a confrontation with one of the great ritualists, Hindu ritualists of the time, and he went to see him. And he found Kumarila about to burn himself alive. Kumarila said to him, "The Buddhists developed such strong logic that in order to meet them, as a young man, I disguised myself and I went and I entered the Buddhist order in order to learn this logic, which I did, and I have used it effectively. But for the sin of doing that, I'm going to burn myself now. You'd better go and see and have your debate with my best pupil." So they took the Dharma and the infringement of Dharma very seriously. And this was one of the reasons why the caste position was able to go on for so long. Because there were these spectacular cases in which the representative of that caste was willing to sacrifice his life in a particularly difficult way in order to uphold the Dharma of his class. When it's said 100 years after the Buddha's death, but the northern and the southern traditions conflict about the date of the Buddha by about 100 years. It's said that 100 years after his death there was a first council to meet with a number of points, of which the central one was whether it was right to solicit for money from the laity. Now, of course, you recognize this same thing in the order of St. Francis here. He began as a total renunciate, determined to own nothing. But in his case, because of the authority of the church, within 24 years, the order owned big buildings. However, the same point arose there. Now, there was a dispute, and it's thought that this dispute was partly geographical, the monks of the East and the monks of the West. The India of the time was divided into kingdoms, and the East was gradually swallowing the West. Well, that doesn't make for easy relations ever. There was a third council, or there's said to have been a famous third council, held by the Emperor Ashoka after, again, perhaps another 100 years. Well, this was used to be for me a sort of marker in Buddhist history, and I've been slightly disoriented by finding that the northern tradition doesn't mention it. However, all may not be lost. It's quite possible there was a regional council of the monks of the East. Ashoka, the great emperor, is worth reading up and studying in order to meet the point that these religions of the East are unworldly and nearly always disastrous, especially in regard to the doctrine of karma. This reign, even secular historians allow was a serious attempt to spiritualize a great empire full of different races and languages and cultures which had recently been conquered by force. And that attempt was, for a considerable time, partially at least, successful. Ashok followed a certain precedent in Indian practice. It was quite common for the kings to support religious organizations of all kinds. They recognized that religion was a force for order. Whether they believed in it or not themselves, they recognized its desirability. To that extent, they're far more intelligent than the skeptics of our own time, or like Voltaire, who would simply tear down all religious faith, partly to satisfy their own vanity. Whereas, for instance, the Chinese Confucian skeptic would always perform the ceremonies with great reverence for the sake of the people who are unable to control themselves without feeling there's some divine power who is watching and will reward and punish. What he is worshipping is harmony and order. What they are worshipping is a personal God. But he supports that because he realizes there will be no control without it. And he foresees, as some skeptical Indian kings foresaw, that without religion, there will be no possibility of social self-control. Well, Ashoka was a believer in Buddhism, but he realized that it was no use trying to force his own beliefs on the whole country and the varied peoples. So he chose this concept of dharma, which is a very old one. And it means a number of things. One of the things it means is the natural property of a thing. In Indian logic, the dharma of a diamond is hardness. The dharma of water is liquidity. It can be frozen, or it can be converted to steam, but this is not its natural state. And there is a natural course for man, which is dharma. And Ashok utilized this concept, which all the religions of his time had, and he said, I will rule, not by conquest, by force, but by conquering the hearts of the people by dharma. And it's an interesting fact that the Indian Machiavelli, Kautilya, about 100 years before Ashok, said there are three kinds of conquerors: the voracious conqueror, the ferocious conqueror, and the virtuous conqueror, who actually conquers the hearts of the people, so that they voluntarily accept his rule. And he does comment in his classic on worldly advantage that if you can secure this, you have the greatest advantage. Ashok's dharma can be read in some of the edicts. He followed a custom in India where if a king donated, say, the produce of a village to support a temple or a religious order like the Jains or Shramanas like the Ajivikas, of course tax officials and other officials are liable to make encroachments and start demanding some of the produce for themselves. So there was a custom of engraving the grant in stone. Rather difficult to take away, rather difficult to obliterate quietly, not like a document that you can tear up or that you can have conveniently burnt and then fail to remember just as it was. So he followed this system, and at the important places in India, he selected some great rock or crag or boulder, or he would erect a pillar, and on this he engraved the principles of dharma on which the country was to be run.